Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF FM in Palmer, Alaska, in the Matsu Valley. We also are streaming live on the internet, radiofreepalmer.org. Just hit that streaming button, as well as our brand new iPhone and Android app. You can find it in the Google Play Store, as well as the iTunes Store. Just check for KVRF, and you can hear Mushing Radio or any of our broadcasts at any time. Tonight, we're going to deviate a little bit from our Musher series and interview an author. Her name is Andrea Thalassinos, calling in from Madison, Wisconsin, to talk about her brand new book, An Echo Through the Snow. Andrea, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you for joining us this evening. I know you're about 3 hours difference from us, so hopefully it's not too late in your neck of the woods.
No, it's not at all.
How is it out in Madison? I lived in Duluth for quite a while, and I missed the place, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit too hot for me down there.
Well, fall is coming in. The leaves are just a hint of yellow and orange here and there, and the mornings have been the beginning. You can feel they're in the 40s, so you can tell fall's on its way, and a lot of us are very grateful for that. So, yep, it's been a hot summer, so it's nice to feel the cool breezes. So, yep.
Very, very nice. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I know we introduced you as the author of a brand new book, but what mm-hmm. do you do, and who are you all about?
Well, I, for many years, I ran a six-dog team of Siberians here in Wisconsin, and till they gradually just got really, really old, and we couldn't run them anymore. And also did dog rescue, Siberian mostly, breed rescue, and I ran mostly Siberians, and you know, it was one of these serious recreational mushers. We go out 4 or 5 times a week. I used to keep copious records of trail conditions and everything, and how far it took to go, you know, certain places, the trail conditions, and I loved it. I loved, you know, having my dogs running. I loved watching them do what they loved, and it was, you know, the whole sport, it just was, I just loved it, and it was very infectious. And what I do for a living, I mean, that was what we did for fun. What I do for a living is I teach sociology at a 2-year college here in Madison, Wisconsin, and I've done that for almost 20 years. So, and
right.
Originally from New York City, and parts of Long Island, and I came out to Madison to go to school and really liked it and stayed. And that's kind of what happens to a lot of people who come to this town. They don't anticipate liking it so much, and they end up staying. So, yeah.
So tell the folks that are listening tonight, how did you get involved in mushing? From somebody from
New York.
the busy suburbs of New York, Long Island, you mentioned, how in the world do you find mm-hmm. your way to the back of a dog sled?
Well, you know, I spent many years asking myself the same question, how that happened. And it initially started when I finished graduate school. You know, my thought was, oh, I want to get a dog. I want to write fiction, and I want to get a dog. And I wanted to get a husky because I thought they were beautiful and had blue eyes. And, you know, when I got my first one, and then my kids were like, we have to get a second one, Ma. You know, the first one's lonely. And so I got the second one. And then the mailman in the neighborhood told me about a woman in the neighborhood who had 2 Malamutes and a dog sled. So I found my way to, you know, this person's house, and in the first snow, she agreed to take me and my dogs out. And as soon as, you know, my 2 little Siberians, they were so small next to those huge Malamutes, as soon as, you know, we were hooked up to the gang line and took off, I mean, I was hooked. That was it. I just loved it. And I just thought, my God, I got to have my own team. And it was really very infectious, and I loved it. And I remember thinking, you know, what is a Greek girl like you from New York doing, you know, on the back of a dog sled? And I don't know. I just loved it. And I read everything I possibly could. There weren't too many mushers at the time in this part of Wisconsin, in this area. But I would run on the bike trails. I would run the snowmobile trails when there was enough snow. And I loved it. And what made me start thinking about a book was I started to do some research into the Siberians. And I remember thinking, well, are they kind of like a made-up breed? Is it, you know, what are these dogs? And I remember one of my first books was I bought it from a pet store, you know, these little breed books.
Uh-huh.
You know, how to raise and train your, you know, Pomeranian or your Siberian Husky. And I read that, and I read about the history about the Chukchi people, that they came from Siberia. And, you know, being an academic myself, that's all I needed to hear. And I, you know, just lost myself in the stacks of the books and holdings here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And I started doing some pretty serious research about the Chukchi and their dogs, the place that the dogs, you know, played in their society, in their everyday life, their spiritual beliefs, and their survival. And I read, you know, all sorts of ethnographies from Norwegian explorers in translation, Russian explorers in translation. And the more I read, the more I felt, you know, like a story coming on. I had written a couple of other novels, but it was nothing like this. And I just felt very inspired by these people and their lives. And then when I had read what happened to them under Joseph Stalin, what happened to many of the peoples of, you know, the former Soviet Union, I really realized that, wow, this is like a tragedy that the world isn't really aware of. And, you know, what happened to the culture, there was a huge population attrition of Chukchi and many of the other groups in that area, and their dogs pretty much, you know, were, you know, the ones that came to America, to Alaska, were the ones that, you know, basically survived. And it was a real tragedy. And I felt, I don't know, I just felt like that all of the research really fueled the creative part of the story, you know, about the Chukchi and about what happened to them. And in my book, yeah, I'm sorry, Ken.
Oh, I was just going to mention there, Andrea, if you could, you know, I don't even know that story, and I'm sure a lot of mushing folks that mm-hmm. you know that have studied, you know, how to drive dogs don't know that story mm-hmm. as well. Would you? I know we want to talk about your book, but I am fascinated mm-hmm. by what you just said about that whole Stalin regime and how they forced mm-hmm. them out and eradicated them. Can you share mm-hmm. a little bit of that for us?
Yeah, and my book kind of tells that story in detail. But basically, when the Red Army, you know, their marching orders were to collectivize and Sovietize all of the peoples of the, you know, the Asian steppes, all the way over to the Bering Sea. And if people were forced, in this case the Chukchi, whether they were the reindeer breeders or the marine people who lived on the coast who had dogs, they were to surrender their reindeer and their dogs, their clothing, their artifacts, everything. You know, their houses were burned, and they were forced to speak only Russian, to live in Soviet-style housing, and were forbidden from practicing any type of spiritual beliefs. You know, the dogs were seen as a waste of food, and many of them were just shot. And the people who resisted were just basically, you know, executed. And which was true throughout, you know, those Asian steppes. I mean, it's estimated that Stalin killed possibly in excess of, you know, as many people that Hitler killed, you know, only that the vast expanse of, you know, Russian Federation, I mean, it's huge. And the Chukchi in particular, you know, Chukotka was kind of like a prime target because it was immediately across, you know, from Alaska. And so this was the area where the crushing down of the people was particularly harsh. The Chukchi, particularly the maritime, they were prohibited from hunting and fishing, which is how they basically had supported themselves, you know, because they would you know, hook up the dogs. They would run them out onto the Arctic Ocean. They would fish. They would, you know, fish either, you know, seals or walruses, and they'd pull them out of these blowholes, and they'd, you know, crate them back on the sleds. You know, this was like their life. And they were forbidden from doing that and were basically sent to work in camps, you know, basically fish factories, reindeer processing meat plants. Their children were also sent off to boarding schools, which are very similar to what had happened here in the United States with Native American boarding schools. And the Chukchi children and the Ivenik and many of the other Native groups in that part of Russia were, again, stripped of their clothing, forced to speak Russian, forced to, you know, become Sovietized, and were taken away from their families for a number of years. And this was devastating for not just Native Americans when it happened here in the United States in the late 1800s, early 19, really all the way to 1959 in the United States. And it was equally as devastating to the Chukchi and to some of the other groups at that time. So, and this is just not a very well-known history that I know that when I started reading and discovering it, I just was amazed that these people, you know, who had lived in this fashion, you know, in the old ways for, we don't even know, tens of thousands of years, suddenly, you know, their whole life comes to a crashing halt in a matter of decades. So,
wow. You know, Andrea, yeah. We're talking to Andrea Thalassinos this evening on Mushing Radio. I so appreciate that. We have not heard that story before, and, you know, I've done mm-hmm. a lot of research on mushing, and, of course, my history usually starts with, you know, with mushing here in America, you know, Leonard mm-hmm. Sepala mm-hmm. and those type guys that are here in Alaska, but there is so much more history there. And
yeah,
I don't want to put you on a spot here at all. Maybe you can share it over email, and we'll get it posted later on when we post your show. Do you happen to have any sources or any books that tells this history that you know about that other people can find, whether it be, you know, Amazon or their mm-hmm. their local university library, anything like that?
Well, there is there are a couple of scholars. There's actually a really good working dog web. I don't know if you've ever heard of Patty Gray, but she is, I believe she's an anthropologist. And she's worked with the Chukchi, and that might be a good place to start, working dog web. There's a bunch of, boy, I have like academic sources that I can probably look them up and share them with you. But, you know, if you just go on the internet, there are many, many articles and, you know, websites that talk about this. Offhand, I'm trying to think of some of them.
No, don't worry
yeah.
about it all. If you get a chance, definitely send over the links to us, and we'll get those posted. I would really appreciate that. But again, we're talking mm-hmm. to Andrea Thalassinos this evening. She is the author of a brand new book called An Echo Through the Snow, and it talks about that early history of the Chukchi people mm-hmm. over in Russia. But this is a novel, and it's about, of course, you're talking about Siberian Huskies in, mm-hmm. in the previous comments. But let's talk mm-hmm. about that book a little bit. Brand new, came out in late August. What is it all about? Because obviously I haven't had a chance to read it yet, and you and I have been talking for a few months to get you here on the show.
Right. Well, the book basically, the structure of the novel is that there are two stories, and they interweave. One story is about the Chukchi, and it starts in 1929 in Yulin, which is one of the furthest most villages across from the Bering, from across, you know, from across, I guess it would be the Seward Peninsula. And so that's one of the stories. It starts following this family in 1929, this Chukchi family, 1929, and it goes all the way through 1992 to post-breakup of the Soviet Union and how these people fare, what happens to them. The second story takes place in northern Wisconsin up on Lake Superior and follows this young woman, Rosalie McKenzie, who is kind of drifting. She's sort of lost, and she ends up saving this Siberian Husky that's being kept in a junkyard to be a junkyard dog. And if you know anything about Siberians, it's like that's like one of the biggest jokes in the world about them guarding anything.
Exactly.
And this dog is abused, it's neglected, and she decides she's going to steal it. And she takes the dog, and you know, and those actions open up a whole world of unintended consequences for her, and it changes her life completely. And in doing so, she ends up keeping this dog, and she's sort of noticed by a couple in the town that have a competitive sled dog team, because there's a lot of mushers up there. They run the Bear Grease. Some of them actually run the Iditarod. And they run the Race to the Sky. You know, they do like those northern tier races. And this woman, young woman, Rosalie, gets asked to be a handler. These people are very impressed with how, you know, the bravery that she took this dog, Smokey, how she basically risked her life to save this dog. And she's the kind of person who has no confidence in herself at all. And the only confidence that she has is through this dog, through having saved him and cared about him. And so she takes this job with this, you know, this couple, that Jan and Dave, and she learns that she has this ease with these dogs. She has this ability with these dogs that she never thought she had. First thing that she's able to do and not really be a screw up. And this kind of puts her center stage. These people are going to run their first Bear Grease, the marathon one of, I believe 410 miles or whatever the heck it is, you know, on a good snowy winter up there. And it just totally is transformational for her. It changes her life. And then the two stories, you know, throughout the novel, weave together. The Chukchi story, starting in 1929, you follow these people throughout the book. You follow Rosalie in 1994, you know, so it's more of a contemporary story. And the two stories meet up at the end. And basically, it's about the Chukchi wanting back their dogs, you know.
Huh.
And because the vast majority of them are in Alaska. You know, went to Alaska, like in 1909 for the sweepstakes, and in other sort of installments. And it's a story of this one Chukchi woman smuggling out two teams of her dogs in 1929 just to save them from annihilation. And with these two, you know, guys from Nome who had just kind of, you know, driven across the, you know, they were just looking for fast dogs. And here they come upon this woman whose life is, you know, possibly about to end through this, you know, Soviet invasion, and they bite off much more than they bargain for. And so this is life-changing for them. And so it's really a story about love of dogs. It's a story about loss of culture. And also it's a story about, you know, rebirth and cultural reclamation, which is what happens after the breakup of the Soviet Union, with the Chukchi wanting to get their life back, get their skills back. You know, another tragedy for the Chukchi was after the breakup of the Soviet Union, basically officials just hightailed it out of there. They just didn't want to be stuck there for another winter, you know, because in that part of the world, you can't get in, you can't get out in winter. That's it. And they left, and basically there was starvation, you know, in that part of Russia. The Chukchi no longer had these skills that they once had, you know, how to hunt, you know, on the sea ice, how to, you know, survive. And so basically, you know, starvation was rampant, and it was the Inuits, many of the Inuit who came over, you know, later that winter, to teach the young men, you know, how to whale, how to hunt, you know, how to fish, all of these techniques that had been lost. They had been basically snuffed out by the Soviets. The Soviet army used to go out with these gunboats and just, like, blow these beluga whales to smithereens. I mean, that was, like, their technique of fishing. So it's really, you know, I did a lot of research for this book, and, you know, I it was such an amazing story of what happened to these people, and I just felt compelled to tell this story, and not just because I love the Siberian dog and I've had them for so many years, but to learn about their history and maybe bring some light and understanding to where these dogs come from, the people who bred them, and the people who created this breed, and which is a very historic breed. And so,
you know, Andrea, again, we're talking to Andrea Salacinos, the author of a brand new book called, a brand new novel called An Echo Through the Snow. It's about a Siberian, and of course, I'm very fond of the breed. I've had him since my first dog. His name was Axel in 1987, and like you said, once you get that first one, it's tough to shake the sickness, I guess. And here I am, here I am, almost 25 years later, and I have 30 dogs in the backyard and up here trying to do the Iditarod. So I understand totally exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I know you are. Yeah.
So if I could, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. My first question is, you mentioned that the story takes part in kind of two different planes. You're talking about the Chukchi people from early 1900s, like you said, 1929, and then it goes back and forth to this young lady, Rosalie, in 94, you said?
Yeah, 1992 and 1994, between those 2 years, we kind of follow her and her life and what happens to her. Yeah.
So I don't want to give away the book, of course. We're looking for folks to go out and buy the book and read it for themselves. But how do you intertwine those two stories? If you could give us an example, because that's a heck of an amount of years between 29 and 94. So how do you tie those two together?
With great difficulty. And, you know, and it's interesting because when I first started writing this book, the two stories were just... they just were there together and inseparable. And people would say, well, why don't you write one story or the other, but you can't do both. And I'm like, why not? You know? And as there are so many parallels between the lives of this Chukchi woman, Gianta, her husband, Tariam, and Rosalie in Bayfield, Wisconsin. There are a lot of parallels without it being woo paranormal, you know, which it's not. Just these, you know, life coincidences where you start to see, oh, my goodness, what's happening? You know, what happened here happened there, you know. So, and the stories, you know, the Chukchi story kind of evolves from 1929, and then we see them in 1940, we see them in 1950, 1960, and then we see the breakup of the Soviet Union. And so that story progresses much faster. We follow this man, Tariam, with his family, where he tries to escape the Soviets into the interior section of Chukotka to live with some of the reindeer breeding people. But the Soviets make it there, too. You know, there's, like, no escaping them. And we also follow, through his life, just the demise of a lot of the land and the pollution of the land, and also his longing for his dogs, his longing for and his grieving for this loss of life that he had, that they had, the loss of their people. I mean, you never think it's going to be your people that end.
Right.
You know, you think,
right,
you know,
exactly.
Like if we could think of the United States, we would never think we would end. We would be forever. You never
exactly.
think that one day, you know, and this is, you know, how he thinks. You know, he says, we're Chukchi, we've always been. And then suddenly, you know, somebody bigger and badder comes along and, you know, they win. And your life is diminished, you know. And so, and yet Rosalie is also experiencing these same things at the same time. She's in an abusive marriage, a very early abusive marriage. She has no self-esteem, you know. So she's battling a very similar type of struggle within her. It's a personal struggle and a familial struggle. And so, you know, it's kind of like one battle is external, and Rosalie's battle is internal, you know, and then they meet up at the end in the last couple of chapters. I don't want to give the book away, but the two stories come together. You know, they kind of get closer and closer and closer, and then suddenly they become one, and it's one story, you know, in the end of the book. And the resolution, or at least I should say the beginning, you know, of maybe a renaissance for, you know, trying to restore culture, you know, that was basically decimated
But, wow. You know, Andrea, I had no idea. I was expecting a cute and cuddly little novel about a Siberian, and there's so many of those out there. And then you went into some deep stuff here, and I so much appreciate you taking the time to be on our show, and it's much appreciated that you're on. We have about 5 minutes left. I definitely want you to tell folks where they can get the book. I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. I know it's available there. Is it available on the Kindle and the iPad and all that kind of new stuff these days?
I believe it is. I think it is available. I think Amazon does have a Kindle version of it. It's also available in bookstores. It's available in Barnes & Noble. If it's not available in a smaller independent bookstore, you can request it, and Macmillan is the publisher, and they will send it anywhere,
cool.
including Alaska. And it's just the kind of book that I when I was writing it, I thought, oh, my God, this is a book that, dog mushers would, especially people like you guys up in Alaska, you're so close to this part of the world, and the history there is just so big, that it would be such a great book to read. And I think you're right. I mean, people initially who picked up my book, some of the things they said, I didn't realize there was going to be such a dark story, and I think they expected little cuddly puppies and things like that. And although there is enough in there like that, it really is a story about love and loss and about history and about dogs and, the amazing breed, the amazing dogs that these are. And I was so inspired by my own team, my own little team, and by doing rescue for so many years of Siberians, and I just came to love them, and it's just something that I just will always love them.
I think we have time for one more question, if I could ask. We have about 3 minutes left, Andrea. What have you found? You talk about those parallels between, the early history, I'm talking in 1929 up until now. How do you see that mushing has changed or evolved or is still the same from back in the early days of the sport and, of course, the lifestyle?
I don't know how accurately I could speak that. Just from my own, from having watched, dog sled racing. I never was a racer. I always saw myself as a serious recreational musher. It seems that the race is very, very fast now, and more than. In fact, when I look at the winning times, like when Libby Riddles won the Iditarod. The winning time was like 2 weeks, and now it was 9 days, or
right,
8 days.
Right.
And it has gotten so fast that although part of me just admire, I think that's just amazing. That's just another part of me thinks, but what about the history, the historical part of this? And so I don't know, so I'm of two minds of this, about is it really all about the speed? And yet I guess it is. And I guess it was in 1909, too, because, the Alaskan sweepstakes, they brought these little tiny dogs, these little mutts from Siberian villages, which is what Siberians are today. I mean, just descendants of these dogs. And people looked at them and laughed at them. And yet they were fast. And I guess fast has been the name of the game,
Exactly.
When you're racing. So anyway...
What? Awesome stuff. Andrea Thalassinos is our guest tonight, and we're definitely going to post a bunch of links and things. Hopefully she can send over some information about this very historical information that she shared with us today, and we'll get that up as soon as we can on our Facebook page and all that. Andrea, do you have a website yourself? Are you on Facebook, Twitter, anything like that?
Yes, I do. I do Twitter, and I also have a website up. It's AndreaThalassinos.com. My name, AndreaThalassinos.com. And I do have some links there you can look up, and I will put up some of the more academic ones. In fact, I'll email them to you, and you could put them up if anybody's really interested in going into some of the more hardcore historical things. So.
Very good, very good. Andrea,
very cool.
we're about out of time here. It's been my pleasure, and we'll definitely shoot over any comments, questions, concerns that folks have in the future.
That sounds wonderful.
Well, again, thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Yes, and thank you, Robert, so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Andrea Thalassinos was our guest tonight, the author of a brand new novel, An Echo Through the Snow. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Bye.